I have in front of me a very, very big book. It takes up half the desk, actually. And this book is quite an eye-opener. It's full of photos, fabulous drawings by children, and a great story told in two languages. It's set in a part of Australia that most of us know nothing about. And this book isn't just big, it's a new and welcome addition to resources for Indigenous students, indeed, all students. The book is called The Frog and the Brog, and there's quite a story behind it. And the woman behind the project, Liz Thompson, is with me now. Hi, Liz.
Hi.
This book is part of a series called Sharing Our Stories. Where did the idea for this series come from?
Well, it was an idea that I had a couple of years ago with a desire to create more material, Indigenous-related material for the education system, but also to work in a collaborative fashion with the Indigenous communities so that, in fact, they're telling the story, the kids are doing the pictures, the first-person quotes throughout the book from the elders, from the kids, about their relationship with the story currently. The whole book is introduced by the community. It's, we live in Maningrida, our language is, we're sharing this story because.
So who's it for?
Well, it's ultimately for, well, ideally it's pitched towards maybe year 5, 6, primary, upper primary, but it would be of interest to an adult. I mean,
it's that I suppose classroom format, isn't it?
Where
it's this big,
a classroom,
so the teacher
resource.
Can have it at the front.
It's designed for the teacher to sit at the front, obviously, but there is a small version, soft and hardback, smaller version coming out later in the year.
It's almost the size of a broadsheet newspaper.
That's how I'd
put it.
Yeah.
How much of these books are yours, and how much is from
the community?
The community.
Well, okay, so I did all the photography. So the main components in the book are 2 pages of introduction to the community, which is usually one of the elders has provided that information.
Yep.
And there's a double page spread from the storyteller telling why they've chosen to share that story and put it in this book. The photography is all mine. The illustrations are done by the children in the community at the school over the course of 2 or 3 weeks.
Right, okay. So is there an issue of ownership of the story?
Well, of course, the story is the intellectual property of the storytellers and remains so.
Right, so is that where any royalties go? Or?
Yeah, well, if there's any royalties, if the book does well, which hopefully it will, and I think it will, there's a split between a 50-50 split between myself and the community.
They must be happy, the communities, to share their stories, to tell them, hopefully, to a much wider audience.
Well, it was quite interesting because when I approached the communities, I approached more than 6, thinking a few would respond, perhaps. But in fact, almost all the communities responded, almost all of them with a great interest in participating in the project. And yeah, there was a very strong conveyance that a lot of stories being lost. In Maningrida, the turtle dreaming story, I remember Alistair Jalalbu James, the storyteller, saying, metaphorically, we've already lost some of the pages. Obviously it's not written down yet, so it's not a pages situation, but he was alluding to the fact that Jimmy, the old song man, was not going to be with them much longer, that he hadn't passed everything on, that already some elements of story had been lost, and that from his perspective and those involved, putting it down in this book was an attempt to hold story.
You're a white woman putting together these books about Indigenous culture. The project must have involved a high level of trust and sensitivity too.
Well, I've worked with Indigenous communities, not just in Australia, but Asia Pacific for probably over 20 years now. Yes, of course, trust is required, some of which is, I think, set up in the way in which the communities are approached in terms of retention, of course, of intellectual copyright, of material, of payment made to illustrators, to storytellers, to translators, to all of those people who are absolutely imperative to the manifestation of the book. All the proofs were sent back over 3 or 4 times, and their input of the communities, the desire of the communities. For instance, one story, too much was revealed inadvertently.
How can that be?
Well, sorry. There's layers of story. There's layers of the same story, and there's a version of the story that's appropriate for children or for you or I as uninitiated white people. But there's other layers of the story, secret and sacred layers of the story, that are not to be revealed in a publication. So inadvertently, there was a little too much revealed, and then so, you know, in the proofs, that was picked up on and all stripped out, obviously, you know. So there was a very solid process of a collaboration.
On Life Matters today, my guest is the woman behind the Sharing Our Stories project, Liz Thompson. Liz is a photographer, writer, and a radio producer, actually, as well. Well, look, take me through the story behind the book that we have here, which is The Frog and the Brolga.
This story is shared by Shirley Drill from Frog Hollow community. The people come from Pernalulu, or many people will know as the Bungle Bungles area up in the Kimberley in WA. Mm. And this story is what I guess would perhaps be called a creation story. It's about the frog and the Brolga. So just in a nutshell, the Brolga steals all the water from a waterhole in a Coolerman and flies away. The frog ultimately knocks the Coolerman out of the Brolga's, from under the Brolga's wing, and all the water pours back into the waterhole. And at the moment the water pours into the waterhole, all the people rise up. So it's the waterhole from which the people came. And we went back to this waterhole. We walked with Shirley, myself and Shirley and 16 kids and Shirley's daughter, through the Bungle Bungles, through vast expanses of incredibly spiky spin effects, finally arrived at the waterhole. And for a lot of those kids, it was the first time actually that they'd been there. And they write in the quotes that you can read in the book, you know, it was incredible to go with my grandmother to see this place from which our people came. And on either side of the waterhole are two huge rocks, like sentinels, one being the frog, one being the Brolga. So it's a story about that time and about that experience for this community. And when Shirley actually came out of from that walk, she said, "I'm too old. I'm not ever going back there again." So
that's big, isn't it?
It was great that the project was actually also about taking 16 kids back to that place.
Yeah. You go through the book and it's written in English, and you've already mentioned this, but they're all of these books are in English, but they're also in language too. That's unusual.
Well, it is unusual, but really important. And to the credit of Rigby Pearson, who published it, I mean, the elders wanted it in language. The languages are alive. The languages are another thing which are slowly being lost. You know, there's very few bilingual schools or two-way schools in Australia. And so these stories were told in language, you know, and it's appropriate that language is honoured, if you like, and that kids who read these books understand that these languages are alive and that there's many of them, and also that the Indigenous kids have access to stories in their own language, so that literacy isn't just an English exercise.
The kids were very much involved, as you said. You took them in and they did these fantastic pictures. It must be wonderful for them to see their own stories in a book.
Yeah, they're delighted. And I had the great fortune of being back there the following year when they came out and taking them back by hand to the communities. And, yeah, the kids were really excited to see their work published.
So this isn't the end of the project, though, is it? You're actually now looking at the next stage of where you go from here.
Whilst I was compiling this series, I was asked on a number of occasions by elders to facilitate training of their young people to self-represent. I mean, the whole approach to these books is, whilst I am compiling and photographing as much as possible, it's a self-representational process, because this is, I think, what's lacking in the education system in terms of resources, Indigenous people speaking for themselves. So what we're doing now is running a series of workshops across the top end in a number of schools connected to this series, where we're training young people to shoot stills, to make short films, to record audio. We're building them blogs. They're uploading their content. There's a comments panel so people can get online, have a look, talk to those young Indigenous kids. And ultimately, we want to connect classrooms from diverse cultural, social, religious, political backgrounds so that kids can actually talk to each other and perhaps sidestep all the preconceptions and prejudices and notions of who each other is or are, and actually get to meet each other, albeit online, which is not ideal, but better than nothing.
Better than nothing. And it takes it to a, you know, a global audience too.
Absolutely. Well, ultimately, perhaps it's a can be a global project.
Liz, thank you very much for joining us today. Congratulations on it.
My pleasure.
That's Liz Thompson. She's a photographer, writer and radio producer, and you can hear her work on a series currently on the Away program on Radio National. And she is the person who's put together this series of books called Sharing Our Stories. They're big format, smaller versions are on the way, along with, as Liz mentioned, a new series from other parts of Australia, including Tasmania. The publisher is Pearson. This is Life Matters with me, Richard Ady, and you're on ABC Radio National.